Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The 438th edition of the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog has just added Pick'em Scorchers, where you can win 100 times your entry in just one game. That's right, turn $5 into $500. Plus, every Sunday, they're giving away $100,000. Use promo code SGPN at Underdog Fantasy for a 100% deposit bonus of up to $500. We're also brought to you by Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account and use promo code CFBX for 20% off your first purchase. And finally, we're brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting research platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit HOFBets.com and use promo code SGPN to get 50% off your start month. And let's start making smarter bets today.
Hi ho, degenerinos, and welcome to another episode of the video era of the MMA Gambling Podcast. This will be episode 438.
Oh, I did it again.
Yes.
I did it again. No. I got to hit stop on it. I'm not used to having to hit stop on it.
Messing up all my intros here. He's not even allowed to talk yet, and he's talking, and he's playing music. This is episode 438. It's going out to Mrs. Gumby Vreeland, because today she turns 21 years old today, which, if you do the math, that makes, and you figure out how old their kids are, Gumby is a felon. Okay. That's all he had. All he had. Wow. Yeah, no, she's not 21, but happy birthday nonetheless. And thank you for letting us record for our degens today and take care of the children. I am Jeff Chalks Fox, as it says on your screen. If you're watching us on YouTube, we got an event to talk about. It was definitely an event. Oh, I'm not in the cave anymore, as you might see. Ugly as ever, but not in the cave. So we're making progress. Maybe I'll shave someday, and we'll see what's underneath this here face of mine. UFC 294, interesting event, to say the least. We're going to break it all down this episode. I think Nathaniel Wood actually summed it up perfectly, summed up the whole event perfectly when he said it was all dick and balls.
I didn't catch him saying it was all dick and balls, but
he said it to the doctor, apparently.
Oh no, you're thinking of Victor Henry.
Oh right, I'm sorry, Victor Henry. Yes. Nathaniel Wood got, yeah.
He got kneed in the balls too, to be fair.
Like I said, the whole event.
Yeah, he also got kneed.
it was Victor Henry who said it was all dick and balls. Yes, and that was the event in a nutshell, literally and figuratively. It was pretty much all dick and balls.
Yeah, it was an event where I didn't, some of those fights were just not fun. Obviously, the two weird no contests, like that doctor just decided to be the main character of a pay-per-view card. Like I don't know what to say about any of that.
I didn't have fun watching it after the fact. And I thought I was doing poor too when I was watching it. And then I recapped after, I'm like, oh, I went 7-4, Gumby went 6-5. So we didn't do horrible, but it sure felt like I was doing bad.
Yeah. Well, I think some of that is like, where you're like, oh, I didn't hit a couple of winners here. I think I've only won six fights and there were 13 of them. But like, then you get the two no contests in there and, you know, I hit a 270 underdog and like that'll do it for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting, but MMA is going to MMA sometimes. And last night or afternoon or morning, wherever you were, it definitely was an MMA event. How was the Discord? I just skimmed through it after the fact. Was it jumping still, even though it was a weird hour of the day?
It was jumping. It did seem like a bloodbath for quite a few people. It felt like people weren't, weren't hitting as well as maybe they have in the past for obvious reasons. And then like we got weird results too. Like, you know, I was in on Sedner Magomedov, but at the same time, like I thought Sedner Magomedov for sure was going to win by knockout. Like I thought that was going to be a striking match. And then sure enough, like Muin Gafurov is just suddenly decides like, no, it'd be a great idea to stick my head on the side of Sadner Magomedov, who is known to choke people. So, like, even the results that we got that were good, I think some people had some props that made them less good.
Yes. Yeah, it was a good night for Fight IQ as well. There was quite a few, what are you doing, moments in that fight. Not just the officials and the judges and the referees, but also the fighters as well.
I'll give a shout out to the judges. The judges were actually really good on that card. I don't think one
co-main event was a weird 28-28 weird score, but
I don't think 28-28 is a weird. I don't think it's a weird score. I think there's a real argument that Usman won 2 and 3, and I don't know that I love the 10-8 first round because there wasn't a lot of damage in there. Like there was a lot of control, and he clearly dominated.
Yeah.
I guess he was close to finishing on a few of those rear naked chokes, so like maybe a 10-8, but I actually don't think 28-28 is that bad of a card.
Okay, there you go. So obviously it wasn't, if at least one person's able to argue and say it's not. So before we jump into Gumby, which hat are we wearing today? That's going to be a thing. Gumby's got different hats.
This is the single A Atlanta Braves are in Augusta, Georgia, and they're the green jackets. It golf
nice
golf reference there. Yeah.
Yep, there you go. Gumby is full of cool hats, and it was mentioned Superfan Jong noticed his hat last time. It was the something sock puppets, right?
Yeah, Burlington sock puppets.
Burlington sock puppets, right? So there you go, Gumby bringing the heat with the hats. All right, we're going to recap this event. Didn't go out off without a hitch, obviously, on the scales, in the cage. Fighters were allowed to fight with pre-existing conditions. It was a
bloody staff ass.
Yeah, that, exactly. Diagnosis bloody ass. Yeah, so we'll jump all into that after I tell you about the NFL gambling podcast and the giveaway they're doing right now. The NFL gambling podcast guys are doing a review contest. Leave an Apple podcast review with your favorite touchdown related bet for this weekend. Actually, this is probably too late, we're skipping all this, but still, NFL gambling podcast, give them a review, listen to the show, all that stuff. Okay. All right. Forget I said any of that before leading up to that. I'm going to tell you about Underdog Fantasy, though. They're with us. They're not going anywhere. Underdog Fantasy has a way to play alongside your favorite football team all season long. Underdog has just introduced Scorchers. Go 5 for 5 and pick them. Scorchers, enjoy a spicy 100 times payout. And for a limited time, Underdog is extending the first deposit bonus up to $500. $100,000 Sundays continues on Underdog Fantasy. 10 lucky players will win $10,000 each. Do you have an Underdog spicy play, Dan, for anything coming up?
I've been leaning on in the MLB playoffs. I've been leaning on Bryce Harper over higher than half a run. It seems like such an obvious play because the people behind him are hitting so well. Like Alec Bohm is weirdly hitting well, and so is JT Realmuto. So he's just on base for those guys all the time. Plus, he stole home the other night. Over half of a run has been my lean to on Bryce Harper.
And Dan is a noted Philadelphia Phillies fan, so take that with a grain of salt.
But I'm saying higher than on a Bryce Harper, though, means it must be really good because it pains me to put it in every time.
It's true. All right, so watch along, make your picks, and maybe make a little cash over on Underdog's mobile app or website, underdogfantasy.com. And the NBA is kicking off soon. I will be having Underdog daily Underdog NBA picks on this site, sportsgamblingpodcast.com. So that tips off on Tuesday. So you got that too. When you sign up with the promo code SGPN, Underdog will double your first deposit up to $500. That's Underdog Fantasy promo code SGPN. Now back to the show. All right. UFC 294, Etihad Arena, Abu Dhabi, UAE. The announcers were, or at least Daniel Cormier were sure to tell you how amazing it is over there. They really play it up. All right. Main event, I had the winner, did not have the actual result predicted. Who would have predicted Islam Makhachev would head kick knockout Alexander Volkanovski? Head kick and punches, 306 into the first round, leaving little doubt who's the winner of their rivalry. He's up 2-0 now. I had Makhachev minus 250. Gumby had Volkanovski plus 230. Volkanovski says he had a lot of trouble pulling the trigger, which usually happens to older fighters, but also it could be an issue with him only having 2 weeks notice on this.
Yeah, probably a little bit of both of those. I don't think that's necessarily an excuse that we can like hang our hat on. Like I thought he'd be better than that. The biggest issue for me was it didn't seem like he could find the range on the couple of things he did throw. He was real short on it, which is the opposite of what happened last time. And maybe that's, you know, maybe, you know, you could say chicken or the egg thing with the couldn't pull the trigger, because he was like, you know, if you can't pull the trigger, obviously when you do, sometimes it's when you're too far away or too late or whatever like that. But that was the most disappointing thing for me, is he just like, it felt like he couldn't get in there and land anything. And then, you know, obviously that opens you up to kicks because you're at distance. Props to Makhachev. I said before, if there was a fighter who would be more willing or more likely to come up with and have a new wrinkle in his game, it would definitely be Volkanovski. And here's Makhachev with a gnarly head kick. I mean, not that he's never thrown a head kick, but like, seemed way better than it had been in the past. So like, you know, props to him for seemingly developing a new part of his game. I don't know. Do you feel like he's more dangerous now after having watched that? Do you think he's, you know, infinitely better than he was before? Do you discount it because of Volkanovski? How do you like rate that kind of performance with all the variables?
It's difficult, obviously. But it definitely makes him, it gives his opponent something else to think about for sure. It's this guy's head kick knocking out people.
It makes me like even more confident that he'd beat Justin Gaethje. Cause kind of the whole thing for me, like I was already going to pick him if Gaethje is next, cause some people seem to think Gaethje's next. If Gaethje is next and that's what they wind up doing, you know, I wasn't going to give Gaethje much chance. I'd pull the trigger on Makhachev inside the negative 200s. But if you got me up into the threes or something like that, I might think about Gaethje as a value play. But like now that Gaethje's going to have to deal with some striking too, like even in the threes, I'm maybe not loving Gaethje as much.
Yep, that's true. Gaethje does think he is next. So whether that is the case or not, you would think he probably would be. He's like the biggest name. And they could make an argument that he's deserving of next. So I would guess that would probably be next for Makhachev. But as you were referring to, it's hard to take a lot out of this fight. It was quick, obviously. It was, 3 minutes or whatever? And Volkanovski obviously was not at 100% strength in this. Not to mention, he had a cut, 20-plus pounds over 2 weeks, too. So who knows what that did to his brain and his chin. So obviously, not making excuses here. I had Makhachev picked, but that was part of the reason why I had him picked here, is because of the short notice aspect of this all. So, do we want to see Gaethje next for him, or do you think someone else is more worthy?
I mean, the honest answer is it Charles Oliveira more worthy? He was supposed to get this shot, right? Like, ultimately, like that cut shouldn't take his worthiness away from an entertainment standpoint. I prefer Gaethje as a fight. It's a fresh fight. It's he at least brings like a different part of his game, right? Like, his Gaethje's way more dangerous on the feet than Oliveira is. And like, I don't think anybody thinks Charlie Olives is going to like catch Makhachev with a submission. So, you know, like it's a more intriguing matchup to me. It's a bigger name. You know, there's a lot of things that go into it that make it a lot more fun, but either of those two. I mean, like either one works.
Yeah. So if you pull out of a fight, Dan, regardless of reason, UFC is not going to smile too kindly on you.
No. And
it's already springing up in Dana White's comments about not just Oliveira, but Dreyfus Duplessis. You know, whether you have a legit reason or not, they expect you to show up. So,
yeah, he's not too happy with Dreyfus, it seems.
No.
Which may be a story for a different day, but like, yeah, he doesn't seem to like that guy.
if you have a bloody ass, you better show up. If you have if you have skin hanging off your face, and I think he claimed to have staph infection too. So yeah, it was a good night all around for a UFC event, which is regulated by them. The UFC were in charge of everything last night. So any complaints about anything that went down last night, you can talk to the UFC about it. All right. Co-main event. Khamzat Chimaev came out looking amazing in the first round, which, as per usual, against Kamaru Usman, took him down and just basically laid on top of him, not really ragdolled him, but had his way, taking him down, won that round. And then after that, it got a little, obviously, more tightly contested and a little bit more disputed as to who won which round. But in the end, Chimaev won the official decision, 29-27, 29-27, 28-28. Did we learn anything about him? I don't know. I had him at minus 275, so I learned that I won money off it. But regardless, we already knew he was a relentless pressure grab wrestler. I guess we learned that he could take down a guy who supposedly is an elite wrestler himself in Kamaru Usman. So that was impressive. But he's got the same holes as always. The gas tank is an issue, and the striking obviously is still an issue.
He's really not a good boxer at all. I think I said that when we were breaking it down, right? Like, I picked Usman, and I picked Usman for what happened in the second and third round. Usman won 2 out of 3 judges' scorecards in both the second and the third round. If you got all the judges together and they had to agree who won the second and who won the third, Usman won both of those. And I tend to agree. Like, those takedowns at the end of the round in both of them, Khamzat didn't do anything with them. And before that, he was losing the striking battle. So, Usman outboxed him. I will say, I still think the 10-8 round in the first is warranted. It was really, really close. But, man, dude, he was in on his neck so many times. I don't know if we learned something about Khamzat with those choke attempts or if we learned something about Usman, because it felt like being on somebody's back for that long and being, like, highly touted grappler feels like he should have had a submission at some point in time. So either Khamzat's jiu-jitsu is not as good as we thought it was, or Usman has, like, elite defense. I've never really seen anybody threaten Usman with jiu-jitsu before. So, like, I'm trying to think back to, like, who's been in, like, a good grappling position against Usman ever. And I can't come up with anybody off the top of my head. So, like, maybe he does just have elite grappling defense, but it didn't bode well for Khamzat, I would say. Do you think?
No.
And I saw a couple of people who I respect on Twitter posting about this. Do you think this is good enough for Khamzat to get a title shot?
Yeah. Personally, I don't think he is good enough for a title shot, but I think the UFC can make the argument. Yes.
Yeah, I think he beats Strickland is the funniest part. It's like,
yeah, if he goes up to middleweight, definitely, yeah. If he goes down, yes, to welterweight. Middleweight,
stays at middleweight. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm thinking Adesanya is the champ still, but no. Adesanya is taking a break. I was thinking Adesanya would piece him up, which he probably would. But yeah, Strickland, yeah, he could beat Strickland for sure.
Yeah, I think he could beat him. I think he could sub him. I actually saw early odds in that. Do you want to play the guess the odds game? What do you think the books had? This is like an early post, so I don't know if they've moved since. But what do you think the books had post on Khamzat versus Sean Strickland?
Khamzat minus 125.
Khamzat minus 300.
Ooh.
And it had Strickland at like 250.
Would I play that?
So here's the thing that is interesting about it. Because again, like I said, I think I'd take Khamzat. Because I think if he can take Usman down and take his back and like chill on his back for that long, like I think he'd find the sub against Strickland. Right? Like, I don't think Strickland's jiu-jitsu defense is that good. Unless, like I said, maybe Khamzat's jiu-jitsu offense is just trash. But I think it's probably the former more than the latter. And if that's the case, I would pick Khamzat. But after the first round, if he had trouble with like his gas and his cardio in a 3-round fight with Usman on 2 weeks' notice, dude, Strickland would eat that for lunch. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, the other thing is Usman wasn't even really pressuring in that second round. When it looked like Khamzat was fading, it's not like he was getting after it. He was also just enjoying the break, outstriking him by a little bit, cracking him once or twice just to make sure we know who wins the round. And, Strickland wouldn't be that. Strickland would be on top of that dude nonstop for 25 minutes. And I don't know if he could handle that.
And there's all the qualifiers in this fight as there were in the fight we just discussed. Usman stepping in, short notice. And then there's added things, obviously moving up a weight class for the first time ever. And, you know, he's a older fighter at this point, a lot of wear and tear on his body. So
I think he should stay at 85. That's my hot take out of this.
Why not? Yeah.
Cause like he drew on one judge's scorecard with Khamzat, who's, like we're saying, probably the favorite to be champ sometime in 2024. And it's not like there are a whole bunch of like easy matchups for him to get back on track at 170, especially as he's aging, right? He's getting older. So like, I mean, like he doesn't want a third one with Colby. Third one with Leon Edwards seems unlikely. So there are your two title chances right there. He's left like rooting for Colby Covington in that title fight so that he's relevant in the title picture again. And then like, I don't know. I don't think matchups with guys like Sean Brady and Bilal Muhammad are all that like, you know, Shavkat Rachmanov are all that like tempting. Whereas he could stay at 85 and he could fight like, I don't know. Brendan Allen has a main event coming up. You know, like he could fight the Brendan Allens of the world and the Roman Dolidzes, and like I think he could beat those guys.
Yep, 36. Three fight losing streak. Probably. Well, he's got the name, so I was going to say he's probably not sniffing the title shots anytime soon. But maybe he is. So yeah, if it's a quicker and easier route for him at middleweight, then by all means, if it's better for his body as well, then by all means, stick up at middleweight. Cutting weight gets harder as you get older as well. So, and then the nonsense starts with the next fight, light heavyweight. No one won. Dan had Akhlaev, I had Johnny Walker. Neither of us won. It was an illegal knee, no contest. 3-13 in the first round. Walker was the recipient of the illegal knee. Was pretty much good to go, but he didn't understand what the judges or the doctor, I guess, was asking him, and they waved off the fight. He thought the fight was still on. So maybe his actions after the fact proved that he really wasn't in good mental shape to actually continue the fight, but
that's just Johnny.
Exactly, it's true.
This is Johnny Walker.
the doctor asked him what country he's in. He said he was in the desert, which is true.
That's a fine answer, by the way. Also, shout out to our guy Jack in the Discord, who right after that posted, "What country is Abu Dhabi in?"
Yeah, exactly.
And then just like it was radio silent in there. I'm like yep. We're not winning any geography bees in the MMA gambling Discord. So yep. Radio silent in there, nobody answered, and he goes, "See?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's nothing really to say about this fight. I'm sure they'll run it back soon. But yeah, it was just incompetent officiating. Dana White mentioned that the doctor was inexperienced, but guess who was responsible for all the officials last night? Dana White was responsible.
Can I tell you one takeaway from that fight? Is that Magomed Ankalaev's never getting another title shot ever again. Oh,
so wacky. All his fights are so wacky. Poor guy.
Like, they were so pissed off after he drew with Jan Blankovic. And like, some of that wasn't even his fault. I mean, like, he could have pressed forward. He could have done more here or there or whatever. Like, he could have gone for it, sure. But like, it's not his fault that nobody won that fight. And then Dana White was pissed about that. Wouldn't give him the shot again. Books him with Johnny Walker in seemingly like a punishment fight, right? Because it's like it's a lose-lose situation. You're fighting a guy who's ranked way below you right after having a title shot. So either you lose to a guy ranked way below you, or you beat a guy who like you should be. So like, they book him in this lose-lose fight. And what does he do? Blatant knee to the head. Also, can somebody write down what makes a knee intentional or not? Because like, he was down on a knee for like a solid 10 seconds, and then he throws a knee to the head, and they're like, hell of an accident.
Yeah, no kidding. It was a night of fouls, let me tell you.
And non-fouls, as we'll talk about in a few fights.
And yeah, fouls and fouls not called. It was, which luckily we had Daniel Cormier to steer the ship for us and help us through all these rules that he would know because he was UFC champion and we don't know about.
He didn't know that pulling your hair was illegal. He talked about it for a whole round. Are we sure it's in the rules? Are we sure? Because it might not be in the. And then after doing that for a whole round, he was like, I was joking, guys. I see all of your posts on Twitter. I'm taking a lot of heat for this. I was obviously joking. It's like, dude, you just talked about it for 4 minutes.
Yeah. You weren't obviously anything. It was he's been watching too much UFC 1, I believe. And he doesn't know about these new rules. He wondered why they were stopping after groin strikes too, probably, right?
I mean, He seemed perplexed in a lot of moments.
Oh boy.
And you know what? You know what this does? You know, usually after a fight, we say, yo, you know what our big takeaways are, is this and that. I think this says more about Joe Rogan, perhaps, because Joe Rogan either has influence on him from across the world, or maybe Joe Rogan hasn't been influencing him as much as we thought, and he's just that dumb.
He does have a massive reach. That's why Spotify is paying him so much. So who's to say, right? Who's to say? You know who else has a massive reach? Game Time has a massive reach if you want to buy tickets, last-minute tickets. They play up the last-minute thing, but you can buy tickets from them anytime. You don't have to wait till the last minute if you don't want to, because they have killer deals regardless of when you browse their app and buy some tickets, because Game Time is the place for last-minute ticket deals. Forget planning months in advance. Game Time has deals on tickets right up to the day of the event. Get exclusive flash deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, and more, aka us, MMA. We're always thrown in the more bucket, but that's okay. We're used to it. The Game Time guarantee means you always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section in a row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. By my math, that means you make money off of that deal. So snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code CFBX for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code CFBX for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. And we're brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets. Win bigger by betting smarter this NFL season with Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting analytics platform for parlays, player props, and game lines, not limes. Research every NFL, NBA, MLB, and soccer bet with historical stats and data. Enter any parlay ID in the Hall of Fame Bets revolutionary parlay optimizer tool to get hit rates broken down by leg, as well as an expected probability for the entire parlay. Sort all players by hit rate for any bet to learn which players are hot and which picks have value. Stop betting in the dark and join over 30,000 users researching with Hall of Fame Bets to craft more intelligent, data-driven parlays. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit hofbets.com and use code SGPN to get 50% off your first month today. Start researching, start winning with Hall of Fame Bets. Moving on.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Along, we did get a result, and a result we wanted in the next fight. Middleweights, Ikram Aliskarov versus Warley Albaz. This basically was a replay of Aliskarov's UFC debut. Him getting caught with shots, him kind of stumbling around, looking like he's in trouble. Maybe that's just his style. And then he comes through. First, it was the jab, which basically was the beginning of the end for Phil Haas in their debut fight. It was the beginning of the end for Warley Albaz. Hurt him with the jab, then ended up TKOing him with knees and punches, 207 in the first round. It's a kind of a wild ride, though, following along with Aliskarov, because, like I said, he always looks like he's in trouble of some sort. Maybe he's just clumsy on his feet. I don't know. Maybe Gummy has some insight into this.
Yeah, I don't really have much insight into this. This is like a fight he should have squashed Alves, because Alves comes up late, you know, just like we just talked about. He's been doing it on short notice, and also, like, against a highly touted prospect versus, like, you know, like the other fights, it was like people who we think of as generally being on the same skill plane. We don't here. You know, he won quick. I do worry about his striking defense. It does seem to be his biggest flaw, but I don't think we will know more until we see him fight somebody.
Nope. And we're probably going to shy away from him with big lines if he does fight someone better going forward, which you would think he would. He was at minus 599 last night. Hit that. We hit Saeed Nurmagomedov at a line that we thought was actually a pretty good line for this fight. He was at minus 218 against Muin Gafarov. He submitted him guillotine choke, 113 into the first round. It was hopefully that fight was loser shaves their back fight, right?
A lot of back hair in that fight. A lot of back hair. Yeah. This is my lock of the week too, by the way. Saeed makes perfect sense. I mean, that's a juicy line. I don't know what it is people love about Muin Gafurov. We've now seen him fight three times, and I don't know why he would be that close to... I mean, I guess Saeed Nurmagomedov is coming off that loss against Jonathan Martinez, but, like, Jonathan Martinez just beat the hell out of Adrian Yanez. So, like, it's not he's like...
aging well, yep.
Yeah, he's, you know, Jonathan Martinez is a tough out. So, like, that's a, you know, like, that was a wild line because Muin Gafurov, I mean, he got beat on Contender Series by Chad and Helliger. And like, got taken down a bunch. And, like, I mean, it wasn't a good fight. He still found his way into the UFC and now is 0-2. So, for him to have that close of a line against Saeed was crazy. And he did, you know, almost what I thought. Like I said, I thought he was going to just get pieced up on the feet and do something stupid and get hit with a punch. Instead, he got pieced up in the grappling when he did something stupid and got caught with a choke. Yep.
Chad and Helliger is one of your whipping boys now. He's always catching strays.
Has he fought in the UFC? I feel like they signed him off a Contender Series so. And he has not fought.
I think he has.
I'll fire Gafurov.
Are we firing Gafurov?
Yeah, probably. He's looked really not good.
Yeah, he's 0-2. Are we firing all of Az, or is he safe because he took it on short notice? He's 0-3 now and 1-4.
Safe for taking it on short notice and going up a weight class.
No, that's true. Okay, fine. We don't want to, just to be clear, we don't want to fire people. We just have to. It's our jobs here. All right, so that was the main card. This is where I made my hay, because earlier in the night, Gumby, you pulled ahead of me in the overall return on investment for the year. You were ahead of me slightly, and then you finish off with some dumb picks, and I pulled ahead. So
Only up a smidgen then, huh?
Yes, a smidge. Okay. Exactly. I went 4-0 on the main card because with the one push, you went 2-2. So like I said, this is where I made my hay. Next fight, good fight. Kind of went the way we hoped, but Tim Elliott couldn't end up pulling it out in the end. Muhammad Mokaev, that lovable Muhammad Mokaev, came through, submitting Tim Elliott with an arm triangle choke, 303 into the third round. A lot of threes there, Dan. Third round, 303. Should have waited another 30 seconds to submit him, but nonetheless. Impressive win. I don't know if it was an impressive performance per se, but it's impressive to be able to submit Tim Elliott because he is a tough old guy.
True. First of all, Chad and Helliger has fought twice in the UFC. He beat Jesse Strader and lost to Haile Alatung, and will be fighting Jose Johnson next month. So working on three fights and wildly unremarkable. Mokaev, like, really good submission win. Clear he's dangerous all the time, right? Like, that's the thing about him. First round, dangerous. Third round, maybe even more dangerous, especially as you're tired.
No knee, dangerous.
Right.
Torn apart knee, dangerous.
I would say this, though. Like, I saw so many takes, and I even posted about this on Twitter. It's like, I saw so many takes of people saying, oh, flyweight's got a problem on their hands. And it's like, I get that he's dangerous, but, like, is he a problem for flyweight? Like, he...
Not yet.
He was
maybe someday.
He was less than 2 minutes away from losing to Tim Elliott because he was down on the scorecards. I don't know if you saw that. Like, two different judges had it.
No, 20, I didn't see it. No,
two judges had it 2018 Tim Elliott, and one judge had it 1919. So if he does not finish that fight right there, and it winds up going another 2 minutes, Tim Elliott takes a decision and hands him his first loss. So, like, again, good for him for winning. Like, great win, like you said, getting a submission, being dangerous, all great. But I don't know that he's a problem there. I wouldn't take him over any of the guys in the top five. I wouldn't take him over Manel Cape. I wouldn't take him over Matthews Nicolau, who are outside of the top five. Like, I think he's a top 10 guy, but I think he has massive holes. Tim Elliott out-wrestled him to start the fight. He took him down with a double leg and was on top right off the bat. So, like, for this guy who is, like, this dangerous wrestler and this, like, world-class wrestler, like, I mean, he needed his gas tank to be his best weapon.
Yep. To the flip side of that, he is only 23, so that is a positive. And obviously an elite base skill to build off of, which is amazing wrestling. Not to mention, obviously, he's got the toughness and the willingness to pull fights, yank them out of the L column and put him into the W column last minute, because he's done it two fights in a row. Fights that shouldn't have been as close as they were, which is the concern there. Once you start fighting more difficult competition, you can't wait till the last minute to win fights. So we shall see, but could be a good fade up. We already faded him last night.
I think I faded him 100 times, like at this point. And like,
yeah,
I would still play Tim Elliott. Like if they rematch this a month from now, I'd bet Tim Elliott 350 again. Like
there you go. So that shows who impressed and who did not impress right there.
Tim Elliott is always fun and impressive.
He is. So is Trevor Peak. He seems to be refining his game a little bit too, eh?
He still threw standing hammer fist.
He did. He kept all the good, but he seems to be getting a little more. He's less of a street brawler and more of an MMA fighter now, it seems. And put all of his skills were on display last night, or yesterday afternoon, against Muhammad Yahya. He took care of him 29-28, 30-27, 30-27. Peak was my lock. He also was my prop, which was via knockout, which sadly did not happen because he decided to grapple a bit, which was making me angry, but it was effective nonetheless. Yeah, like I said, he's looking good. He's always going to be a fun fighter to watch. Probably doesn't project to be elite of the elite, but he's adding new wrinkles to his game, which is good to see.
Yeah, that's a tough weight class to be an elite guy too, right? Like lightweight. Yeah, you're not jumping up that rankings when you like still have growth when you're, you know, what is he, 27 or something like that? Like if you're still growing at 27 and you're not already like elite, it's a hard division to crack into. But yeah, like it's nice to see him developing other parts of his game. It's funny that he throws more hammer fist standing than he does on the mat. He spent 5 minutes of top control through no hammer fists. And somehow we got like 4 or 5 of them in the fight anyway. So appreciate that about him. And also it's kind of what I said about Yahya when we broke it down on Wednesday, is like he's a good counter striker, but like he backs up too much and he clearly doesn't have the gas tank for 15 minutes. Like he needs to go in there and starch somebody or have them play patty cake with him. And Trevor Peak just doesn't do that. Trevor Peak gets after it. Even when Trevor Peak's more reserved, he's still getting after it.
Do you think Yahya has a future at all, or is he going to be like two or three fights and he's gone?
I could be totally wrong about this. He strikes me as the type of guy that the UFC signed because they were going to the UAE and they've never had a UAE fighter before. By the way, that's where Abu Dhabi is.
Yep.
It's in the UAE.
United Arab Emirates. Yes.
Yes. He's the first Emirati, which is what somebody from the UAE is called.
Oh, yeah.
He's the first Emirati in the UFC. He feels like one of those guys they signed because they're going somewhere and then they just sort of like forget he's on the roster. And then like either the next time they're in UAE, like sometime in next October, he gets booked for a fight, or he doesn't get booked for a fight then and just like melts off the roster and we see him in ACB at some point in time.
Yeah. Could be the case. We shall see. Another fun fight. This one should have been an easy win for us. It was not. Javid Basharat, Victor Henry, ended with no contest, accidental grind kick. One of the worst grind kicks you're ever going to see. All you people in Discord claiming Victor Henry was faking. Come on. He was vomiting after and had a testicular MRI. So I don't think you're going to fake that much. I think once you get, it's like pro wrestling. Once you get behind the curtain, you're like, okay, you're all right. I think once they start poking around in testicular MRIs, you're probably not faking at that point.
Yeah, I think he got hit, clearly. I think the way that he fell to start was maybe a little dramatic. Like go back and watch it. It's really funny. Not that getting hit in the groin is funny, but like the way he like flops forward at it, it's like a real good time. So my wife was like, what happened to him? And I was like,
she wouldn't understand.
He got kicked in the balls. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I think he definitely got kicked. Could he have been laying it on thick early on? Maybe, maybe not. There's no real way to know. But you know what my favorite part of all of this is? There is a Twitter battle going on right now between Josh Barnett, who's the coach of Victor Henry, if you didn't already know.
Okay.
Josh Barnett and Javid Basharat. And it's not
– uh-oh.
The argument is not that he was laying it on thick or he was looking for a way to quit. The argument is straight up that Javid Basharat does not believe he was ever hitting the balls. Like, he thinks he thinks he just quit and pretended to get hit in the balls, which, by the way, is what the doctor thought. But
yes.
But at the same time, like, I would get if he was getting the absolute crap kicked out of him, right? Like if he was getting dominated, like maybe you have a leg to stand on. Like he's looking for a way out. And I don't think he was. I think he actually got kicked really hard. He wanted his payday. He was in a reasonable fight. So like, why not keep fighting if you are okay? So like, but if he was getting the crap kicked out of him, yes, you could say like, maybe he's looking for a way out. He wasn't like notably losing that fight. Like, I think he maybe was losing, but it like, wasn't like he was out of that fight. So like the argument that he was faking it all together and needed a way out and he was being a cat, like why? Like he signed up for the fight in the first place. It's like, it's a real bizarre claim there by Javid Basharat. He's maybe showing a little bit of the I train with Jake Shields side of him.
Yikes. You also said a leg to stand on, which is funny. I know it wasn't intentional, but that's a good pun there. How many times can we really say that a fighter look for a way out, as everyone claims, all the like fans and opponents, everyone always is claiming fighters are trying to get out of fights, but really maybe on one hand in decades of watching it, we can say that guy quit on purpose.
I mean, I can think of a couple, right? Like we saw, I mean,
that's the thing.
It looked like Aljamain Sterling was laying it on thick. That's part of why everybody hates him. I still buy that. That's a reasonable explanation. The Alexander Romanov fight against Juan Espino, went into the third round, clear we had no gas, got hit in the balls, ass, or maybe did he get eye poke? I can't remember what it was, but like he was looking for a way out. There are ones where they're looking for a way out, but all of them are when the tide has been turned in the fight and they're like in trouble and they're like a DQ or a no contest here is my best bet. That clearly wasn't the case for Victor. Like he wasn't listless in there.
Yeah. And it's an exception, not the rule. Also, you mentioned a couple and you know, it's been decades of in this sport, but Daniel Cormier probably doesn't, like I said, probably doesn't realize you're not allowed to do that anyhow. So he's wondering what all the fuss is about. Should have been a TKO ball kick. You said Juan Espino, whatever happened to Juan Espino. I miss that guy.
He almost feels like a Muhammad Yahya guy. They liked that they had the Spanish market. They liked that they had a 50-year-old Ultimate Fighter winner, and he was there for a minute, and now we just kind of forget he's there until somebody says his name.
A Mike Tyson punch-out character come to life, and he's gone already, sadly. All right, middleweights, Cedricus Dumas made me look smart. Helped me get a leg up on Gumby here. He beat Abu Azatar, Mr. Potato Head himself. Decision, 29-28 across the board, used his length. Both guys had their moments. They both I think Azatar has more striking power. Like it was more peril when he was hitting Dumas, but Dumas's length and youth probably helped him come through later in the fight, and lack of ring rust like Captain Morocco has. So Dumas came through for me. The Reaper had the victory at -225.
Yeah, Zaitar has about 30 seconds of cardio in him. That's it. Like and I said that. I did think that like he needed an early knockout. I thought he'd find it because I think Dumas is hittable. But he did seem like he got better, right? Dumas using his jab more. He actually looked like he stunned a Zaitar a couple of times with his jab. So I stand by my comment in the Discord, though, that either of these guys would lose to Therese Finney, who was cage side for the Trevor Peak fight.
Yes. Our boy, he's our new project.
He's our martyr. Yes, because it's true. Because we got Josephine Newton into the UFC. We couldn't complain about her not getting into the UFC anymore. So we had to find a new pet project.
It's true. We had to sacrifice Therese Finney to get Josephine Knudsen in, if that makes sense. Is Captain Morocco but the buddies with the king or whatever they have ruling party in Morocco, is he going to get another chance now?
I don't think so. I mean, like, violated the UFC's rules, had been fired for that already, lost to Marc-Andre Barrio and Cedricus Dumas back-to-back and only fights like once a year. Like, Why keep that dude on the roster? Like, I don't know. I'd fire him.
Yep. Dumas, thoughts on him going forward? Any interest in him at middleweight?
He seems to be progressing. It's nice that he fights in the shittiest division in the UFC.
that helps.
Like, that doesn't hurt. I don't, you know, like his thing coming up was that he had some kind of like untouchable power where he one touch knockouted everybody. He won on Contender Series with like a 30-second submission. I mean, like, he doesn't seem like that guy anymore. Like now that he's fighting like real competition. So yeah. I don't know what the ceiling is. Maybe he is progressing a little bit. Like I said, the jab looked better in this one. It seemed to sting in there. You know, he's looking like he's using his length a little bit more. So maybe he's developing. And so we can give him some hope on that.
And he persevered, even though his hair was getting grabbed multiple times.
Not a foul.
Isaiah Tarr was grabbing him by the hair and punching him. And Cormier was wondering if you're allowed to do that or not. So Cormier's been bald his whole career, though, to be fair.
Yeah. Although he's like, 4 minutes he went on about that.
Yes. I get it. He's a nice guy. I get it. He's, you know, he's personable and stuff, but come on. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Just give him the rule. Like, the unified rules aren't long.
No. It's like a couple pages, I think.
It's like 10 pages, I think.
Yeah. All right. So that was that. Oh, we had to have weight misses, too. We couldn't just... Everything that could have basically gone wrong went wrong. We have fighters pulling out a couple weeks before the event. We have two fighters missing weight. We had all the fouls in the fights. I guess the judges were the only ones who really held... They're out of the bargain up here. Mike Breeden came in super overweight, 159.5. So I'm like, oh, he's getting cut for sure. He's never won in the UFC. He's getting destroyed by Angelo Jubilee, who looked really good on the feet for the first two rounds. And this is a strange. It was funny, but it also made me angry because we were in on Jubilee. Breeden came out in the third round and started barking like a dog. And Jubilee didn't know what to do. And he froze and did nothing the whole round.
He looked scared at the barking.
Yes, he didn't. I guess they're probably... crazy street dogs in India, right? Roaming the streets. But regardless, he got himself knocked out 3 minutes into the third round. He did nothing in third. It was like a deer in headlights, as the expression goes, or a deer getting barked at, perhaps. He froze and did nothing and got himself pieced up and then knocked out. I thought he was going to survive, and I'd be like, oh, what an idiot. You almost lost the fight. But no, you did lose the fight.
I spent more time than I've ever thought I would debating with myself on whether or not he was out of gas or scared of being barked at. And that
he showed no signs of being out of gas up to that point. So
yeah, well, and here's the other thing I will say, because this is definitely the low IQ fight of the night. because Jubilee, and we said this breaking it down, he's a really exceptional wrestler. Yep. Like, he's a very good wrestler. He did not try to wrestle a guy who came in overweight, has had trouble with wrestlers before, and has had trouble with gas before. So why not take a wrestling game to him, burn him out, which it seemingly would have been easy, neutralize any of his striking, and put him in the place where he's had the most issues. And instead he sat and kickboxed. And to your point, his kickboxing looks better. But like, why prove that point? Like, what is the point of trying to kickbox with a guy who only wants to stand in front of you and kickbox? So like, yeah, I mean, really low fight IQ from Jubilee. And of course, being scared of a guy barking at you is probably not a good sign in your MMA career.
DMX should have been a MMA fighter. Who knew it was that easy? So I guess we get more Mike Breeden. As you said in the Discord, we get what, three more Mike Breeden fights?
I think we get three more Mike Breeden fights. The dude is 1-4 in the UFC. He's got more lives than Daniel Lacerda at this point in time.
Yep.
Which is just... Who knew?
But he was acting like a Diaz brother, so there you go.
Did you hear what he said in the post-fight interview? I know you don't listen.
Of course I didn't. Did he said, woof, 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 woof,
no,
woof,
but
woof.
He did say that those first four fights were like bad breaks, and he feels like he could be champion.
Bad breaks. They definitely were bad breaks. You got TKO in all of them. TKO in your last one. It was a wild, wild fight. These things don't, I want to say these things
don't, they don't even happen.
They don't.
They don't happen in any sport.
Don't get barked at. And Braden probably shouldn't have been in the fight because he had a nasty wound above his eye heading into it, which got opened up right away. And I think he might have claimed he has some staph infection left also on him.
Sure. Perfect.
So good job, UFC. Once again, UFC, we're regulating this event. So all our complaints.
Speaking of staph infection.
Yeah. Featherweight fight. This one, actually, at least it played out for Gumby. Gumby's been in on a couple of cheaters recently that have come through over me. Muhammad Naimov, you dirty cheater. I think Gumby and him planned this when he was on Gumby's podcast last week, Top Turtle podcast. They planned on all the fouling he would do. Gumby told him just keep fouling because they'll never take a point away. And it's true. Took care of Nathaniel Wood, 29-28 across the board. He two groin strikes that were officially registered with the hapless referee. Spinning back kick that looked like it went low, which was not. Fence grab, which was not.
One fence grab?
Yeah, that's true. A couple of fence grabs that did not register with the referee. And then at the end when Wood was pouring it on, some glove grabs that the ref actually had to break up. So that's a lot of fouls, no point taken. Good job, UFC.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can say what you want about the referee sucking, and he should have probably taken 4 points. But, like, again, I said this earlier in the show, judges got the call right for what they were given, which was a fight where Naimov looked just a little bit better than Wood. Also, like, I know he did do all of those, you know, poor things. apart from the glove grabs at the end, which might have saved him from being TKO'd, did any of them, like, do you think any of them, like, wildly changed the fight?
Fence grabs always do.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just in my opinion, I don't know that Wood would have held him down for any significant amount of time. I guess we'll never know. So, like, me just speculating that is kind of maybe irresponsible. But, yeah, like, I just kind of thought he looked better than Wood in a lot of places. And, of course, obviously the fouls may have contributed to that, but I think he just
may have.
Hey, I'll take the plus 270 and walk home with it.
Exactly. So. Yeah, plus fence grabs stop takedowns, which, if you ask UFC commentators, takedowns can steal rounds, Dan. So Wood could have stole all those rounds with a quick takedown.
Ask UFC commentator.
Exactly. Especially like with 10 seconds, they're my favorite ones. 10 seconds left. Like, oh, he probably stole around with that takedown. No, because it was 10 seconds left and he did nothing with it. But anyhow, yeah, Naimov, if Wood's so good, he shouldn't have kept the fight that close to begin with. Right.
Right.
But who knows how much of his power bar got drained every time he got kicked in the jewels. So we shall never know. But Gumby, this one didn't save your night, but it made your night a lot better with that big hit there in the Hill Man. All right, next fight. This is one with the bloody everything down low, she claims. This is from bloody the fighter, ass. Not from us. Victoria Dudikova has bloody everything, apparently, because she has a nasty staph infection in her nether regions that the UFC just thought was cool. Go ahead, fight. And she missed weight too, which is great, but she came through. We had her and she came through, which is kind of a shame. I like Jin Yufrei, but this is probably the end for her, or should be. She lost 29-28 across the board. Turned it on, but it was too late. But definitely Dudikova, we weren't fans of the minus 500 line on her. I think she's could be a fade prospect going forward. If she's given up, it depends who she, obviously it's depends who she fights and what the line is. But if the bookies are going to give her minus 500 versus Jin Yufrei, maybe fading her in the future because she's not exactly a world beater.
I was really let down by her wrestling. It looked bad. And like I you know, this is somebody who was in on her. I had her by finish, which obviously she didn't get. And like I thought she was a better prospect than she was because Jin Yufrei is, I mean, she's really undersized at fly or strawweight, which is kind of, you know, why we said she's needed atom weight for a while. And, you know, she's now, what is she, like 38 or something like that? She's kind of getting up there. And it's sad to see her go because she's a fun fighter and like a good person and all that. But like she's undersized and she still seemed to have a strength and wrestling advantage on Dudikova. So yeah, it certainly gives, you know, some alarm bells for the future. I might be less on Dudikova than I was in this one.
We had Fry fired before, I think, when she went 0-3. So maybe she'll survive. I doubt it, but maybe now she's 0-4. And in the opener, Gumby got the jump on me here. Shara Magomedov, or Shara Bullet, came through in his debut against Bruno Silva, 30-27 across the board. Definitely, he's going to Magomedov definitely holes in his game. Like if he's getting taken down by a Brazilian kickboxer, you got some holes in your game. Not just taken down, but control it a bit on the ground. But boy, he's going to be a fun fighter going forward. He should pay attention to the Ov at the end of his name and get some wrestling added in there. But a fun striker, a crazy looking wild man. Gumby had him at minus 250.
Yeah, I'm worried about the takedown defense big time. Because he is so fun, and he was even fun off of his back. But like, would he be that fun off of his back against somebody who's more well versed in what they're doing on the ground, who has some like posture and you know, good ground and pound and stuff like that? Because Bruno Silva doesn't have any of those things. So like, I would worry a little bit about him moving forward. But I'll take the win on Shara Bullet. Oh no, Shara Bullet was my lock of the week, correct? Not Saeed Nurmagomedov.
No,
it was Shara. No. It was Shara Bullet.
No, it was Nurmagomedov. You were right. No, it was Nurmagomedov. I have written down.
Maybe it was. Sure.
Regardless, it's a better line. We'll give you that. It's a better line. So
okay.
Cool. All right. 7-4 for me. Down $130. 6-5 Gumby. Down $43 because he hit the big cheater plus 270 line. So I'm at 60% hit rate. Gumby's at 56. As for the return on investment, I'm at minus 4.9%. You're at minus 5.3. So ever so close, Gumby. We both hit our locks, Nurmagomedov or Magomedov, one of the ovs. They both won. And I had peak. And then we missed on our other fancy picks. Azatar, Elliott, Nurmagomedov knockout, peak knockout. And then the parlay, both ends of the parlay crapped out. Azatar knockout, Dudikova inside the distance. Boo.
To be fair, I didn't know she had a bloody ass.
It's true. It is very true. no fight of the night. We have bonuses going to four fighters for performance of the night. Islam Makhachev, Ikram Aliskarov, Saeed Nurmagomedov, Muhammad Mokaev. All right. No UFC this coming week, is there? Boo. November the 4th, they're back. Sao Paulo. So no podcast this coming week then, right?
No, we've got I've got the queued up for you guys. We got on Monday, which is tomorrow, you're going to hear us break down all six fights on an Invicta card from Boston, Massachusetts. Following that, we will be breaking down, I believe the next one we'll be breaking down on Wednesday will be Cage Warriors, which takes place this weekend as well. I think that one's in Rome, if I'm not mistaken. And then on Thursday, we'll be breaking down LFA, which has got a surprisingly good card. Headlined by a pretty good fighter who I actually got a chance to talk to on Top Turtle MMA podcast this week. So make sure you tune into that.
There you go. Tune into Top Turtle for sure. And tune into our next three podcasts. Regional MMA, Gumby makes some good money off of that and helps everyone else do it as well. So that's our next episode. We'll be Invicta, as Gumby said, and we'll recap how the regional, actually one of the regional events has not occurred yet on the weekend, but we talk a little bit about what went down this past weekend, non-UFC. If you want to discuss more with us, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/discord is the place to be. Twitter, SGPNMMA, Gumby Vreeland, Jeff Fox Writer. I'm also Jeff Fox Writer on Instagram. I got a Substack, moneymma.substack.com. Get in there, enter my weekly pick'em contest for free. Get all my writing and podcasts and all that stuff in your ear holes as well. And we told you about Top Turtle. Make sure you listen to Gumby's other podcast, Minus Me. And sportsgamblingpodcast.com is the place to be. And sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Patreon to help us crush corporate gambling. We shall be back tomorrow in your ear holes with Invicta, which shall be fun. It'll be a bullet. Jeff Fox, Hillman, Gumby Vreeland. We shall talk to you then. Bye-bye.